sessions will come to order. Members, please take your seats. The chair recognizes Vice Chair Jones for an announcement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our House Sergeants-at-Arms with us today are Champ Claris, James Worth, Todd Batchelor. We also have Pages serving with us today. And if you would, your Page, if you would stand, raise your hand when I call your name so we know who you are. We have Daniel Nails from Gaston County, sponsored by Representative Current. Garrett Heath from Gaston County, sponsored by Speaker Tillis. And Grayson Russell from Wake County, also sponsored by Speaker Tillis. Welcome to the House Elections Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Vice Chairman Jones. Ladies and gentlemen, the first, the order of business today will be as follows. House Bill 125, House Bill 346, and the chair will make additional announcements at that time. House Bill 125, there is a PCS that's being distributed.
346
is what they just distributed.
The committee will be at ease. Mr. Chair, we've just been handed 346.
Thank you, Representative. We will get to that next. Thank you, ma'am. And then 346. The members now have copies of the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 125. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to recognize Representative Sager to explain this bill. It is a very simple bill, and the chair hopes and expects debate to move rather quickly on this bill. Representative Sager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This bill, we've had this bill primarily for the reason of trying to be a cost-saving measure since the a lot of times there's not much interest in the second primary, and I would leave this up to the County Board of Elections to make their recommendations to the request to the state board if they wanted to have less than the normal precincts open, which would be primarily it would be the early voting sites. And of course, this should, if you know that there's going to be a great interest in the event there was a runoff, then they wouldn't have to make this request, but this also allows them to print less ballots. 25%, no more than 25% of the greater voters that voted in the last primary. And it's a simple bill and a cost-saving measure, and of course, this will be up to your local board to make that determination whether they want to request that or not. They're required to request it 90 days before the first primary.
The chair stands corrected. Representative Cotham moves that the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 125 be before the committee for discussion. Representative Sager has already discussed the bill. Representative Floyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Would you submit those to the chair, Representative Floyd? I haven't seen them. Representative Michaud?
Yeah, I just want to ask a question on the bill. Sure. This says an act to permit counties to open only approved one-stop sites. What you're asking here is that if they don't ask for it, all the sites will be open.
That is absolutely correct.
Right, so if they just want to just open the one-stop voting site, then they would have to get permission to do it. Other than that, all the sites.
Absolutely, and Representative Michaud, I think the reason for that was the fact that, like I said, you ought to be able to determine ahead of time if it's going, you know, it's going to be a tough possible primary runoff race like a sheriff or something like that. Great interest that you wouldn't have to ask for it, and I'm sure that the state board would probably give you some guidance in that area.
One other question.
Representative Michaud?
Yeah. They either have to do this or open them all. There's no in-between.
That's the way it currently is, yes.
Why would you not let them do what the bill originally did, to petition the Board of Elections to open certain sites? I mean, at their, in other words, if they didn't want to open, if they have 50 sites, they wanted to open 25 of them, then why wouldn't they be allowed to do that? If they didn't want to open the 10, why wouldn't you allow them to do that?
Well, I think primarily in consultation with the State Board of Elections is to keep from having confusion. If the people knew that there wasn't one-stop sites that they previously voted at, it wouldn't be hard to educate them and know where to go back to vote.
Well, it wouldn't be hard to educate people to vote when they've already been voted. It would be hard for those who hadn't been at the one-stop voting site.
But those people that didn't have a precinct opened, Representative Michaud would be confusing to them.
I believe you'd like to propound a question to Mr. Bartlett. This is Mr. Gary Bartlett, Executive Director of State Board of Elections.
Bartlett, you heard my question. You got a couple of times.
Currently, there has been a debate about how many sites is worth enough, and it seems like that there are some people who believe that there might be some hotly contested local races that would require more, some less. I don't think that anyone ever had consensus. One of the suggestions that I floated was to base it on the townships within a county. To me, I think it's a policy call, but one thing for sure, we do need fewer polling places open for a second primary, because during my tenure, and I'm not talking about local level, because there's been some sheriff's race that the turnout has been as much or greater than the second primary, but on the state level, during my tenure, the state candidates have turned out voters as little as 2.5%, 13%, the highest number that I know on a statewide race in the was in 1990, and that was between Easley and Gantt. But with statewide races, it's very slim, but it could change on a hotly competitive level.
That's why I raised the question, Mr. Chairman, because what you've got here is you've got one or the other. You either open those sites, those early voting sites, or you open them all, and you don't have anything in between that. And why should they not have the option, you know, based on what they feel, open sites and petition to open sites that they feel they need rather than having a one-stop shop?
That is a policy call. My suggestion is do what you think is right for the voters, and I'll do my best to implement it.
Okay.
Representative Killian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to first address Representative Michaud's concern and then just offer my support for the bill. Just sitting here thinking about what you suggested, Representative Michaud, I guess I would be concerned if they were allowed that variance to do something in the middle. They could have the ability or could be perceived to be choosing certain sites to try to gain both. you know what I mean. And I think that may be an answer to your question. I'm just kind of speculating. I'm not an electrical expert, but that's a thought that's running through my mind. But beyond that, I just want to offer to the bill sponsor that I think because it's permissive and because it is local control, hearing the support from the Board of Elections for this thing, I certainly would support it.
Thank you. Mr. Bartlett, may the chair ask you a quick inquiry. In the counties in which it's required, the one-stop poll sites have been pre-cleared. They've been approved, right?
Yes.
That's already been done. Okay.
It's pre-cleared for each election.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you. Representative? Yes, ma'am. Mr. Bartlett, you're...
I would like to know, what is the procedure for, under just normal circumstances, notifying the Board of Elections about the needs for an election, for number of sites and that sort of thing? What period of time does the Board of Elections have to notify the state of their need?
Currently, a plan for additional one-stop sites is mandatory by law to come to the state board for review and approval. We try to make sure that all plans are completed by Labor Day so that there'll be plenty of time for notice and preparation.
Representative Moore is recognized for a motion.
I would move for a favorable report as to House Bill, to the PCS for House Bill 125, unfavorable to the original.
The motion is in order that this committee give a favorable report to the proposed committee substitute to House Bill 125, unfavorable to the original bill. All those who favor the motion, please sit. Representative Floyd prepared an amendment that does not fit the bill. The chair has given him assurance that we will try to work on this bill on what he wants to get done before we adjourn. Is there further discussion or debate? Seeing none, all those who favor the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All who oppose, please signify by saying no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. The ayes do indeed have it, and the motion carries. Thank you, Representative Sager. The next bill to come before the committee is House Bill 346. This is predominantly Representative The chair is going to yield the chair to Vice Chairman Burr, and the chair will then seek recognition to present the bill.
Okay, thank you. We do have a PCS, and I believe Representative Moore moves that this PCS be before us, and without objection, it will be. And the PCS is before us. Representative Lewis, you're recognized to explain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and ladies and gentlemen of the committee. This bill was, the first part of this bill was originally filed by Representative Randleman, and her intent was very good. The way our laws are currently written, you can, or an individual could, wait until the very end of a filing period to file for an office. The election be held and never have received the, or their committee never having to go through the treasurer training and whatnot to make sure that the reports are prepared correctly. And in fact, the reports aren't prepared at all. To the very best of my knowledge, there is no objection from the Board of Elections on this, and I'll be glad to come back to it if we need to. Section 8 of the bill is at a request from Representative Adams. What it says is that no one individual running on no one individual can be on the ballot for two separate races. In other words, this comes from an event that occurred in her county in which someone ran in a primary for one office and lost, which means they wouldn't be allowed to run as an unaffiliated candidate for that same office, but through a little bit of a loophole in the law, they they filed and ran as a county commissioner and then got on the ballot as an unaffiliated candidate for another office, which happened to be the state house or state senate. What this says is one that an individual can only have their name on the ballot one time. Representative Stanton, I'm sorry.
Has staff checked, there was a case about 20 years ago, the resign to run thing that held that was unconstitutional. Is this okay under that, if I could ask Ms. Churchill?
I think the issue that came up in the Yolk County area dealt with an individual filing in a partisan primary for one race, and then after the close of the filing period, submitting an unaffiliated petition for a second race on the general election ballot, and there's a statutory provision that will actually prevent that. This would just simply say that you can't have your name on the general election ballot twice. It does not say you have to run. It just says that you can't have it on the same general election ballot for the same race.
Well, my question is, you know the case I'm talking about, resign to run, that said you can't have any qualifications other than, does this potentially violate that Supreme Court decision? Would you look at it before the floor?
We will.
Thank you.
Representative Floyd?
Did we not address something similar to this last session? As relates to a write-in candidate.
Are you asking that staff?
Yes. As a write-in candidate.
There was a provision changed in the pledge that a candidate has to sign that if they run in a primary, they will not run in the general election as a write-in candidate. But this is sort of a slightly different situation.
Mr. Chair. Moving on, if we could, Section 9, I would like the committee to please look at the language of this. This is largely the current law. As you recall, there's been some confusion as to if someone who requests an absentee ballot must do so entirely in their own hand. The current law already provided that the county board of election could generate a form to request an absentee ballot. Somehow the folks that have been, myself being one of them, who've been concerned about that provision had missed that point of the law. What this does is direct the State Board of Election to create a uniform absentee ballot request that can be accessed from the State Board website, and that form may be filled out electronically and then, of course, signed by the voter who wishes to vote absentee and mailed in to the county. Section 10 of the bill, Section 10 of the bill is at the request of the state board. It makes only statutory corrections. Section 11 of the bill directs the Joint Legislative Election Oversight Committee to study the feasibility of requiring everyone who runs for office to file electronically their campaign finance reports instead of being able to handwrite them or type them or print them or whatever. With that, I'll yield to any inquiries, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Justice.
Forgive me if I missed this, Mr. Chair. Is this the only way you can get the absentee ballot?
No, ma'am. You may still get it if you read with me, Representative, starting on page 5, line 7. It says, a written request for an absentee ballot as required is valid only if it is written entirely by the requester personally or is on a form generated by the County Board of Elections. That's current law. So currently the counties can generate this form. All we're doing is adding that next part that says, or the State Board of Elections. And then we're going further by saying we're asking the state board to create a uniform form to request an absentee.
Follow. Let me just give a real-time example and you tell me what. My mother can't access this, but she could have requested one, but she couldn't have filled it out. Can she in the privacy of her room have me fill it out without somebody there witnessing it's me filling it out?
As long as she signs it, yes, ma'am.
Questions? Representative Mark.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to be sure that Section 9, which we just talked about, doesn't conflict in any way with the bill that Representative Lewis, Killian, and Paul and I have sponsored on Uniform Overseas Military.
No, sir. We actually put that in another spot of the law. I don't recall the exact section, but staff can speak to it. All this asks, Representative, is that the issue be studied. Should we or should we not, beginning in 2013, require folks to file online? Right now, we get everything from written reports to type reports to my actual favorite ones are the ones that complete the form online, then print the form and mail the thing in. That's my favorite one.
Representative Allen.
I believe Representative Randall's got some really great things in this bill, and if I look at it, I don't see you can follow my motion.
We'll hold that motion for one moment. Representative Ross.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And just on the point that Representative Fisher made and then Chairman Lewis made, for your favorite thing, when people print the form and then fill it out and print it, it's because sometimes when you hit send, it doesn't work. And I'll tell you that I've had a treasurer who's an IT guy for years, and he's a good IT guy. And if he tries to hit send, and he basically, after about 5 times trying to hit send, if it doesn't work, he walks down with the form. And so in the study, and I don't know if it's necessary to amend the bill to do it, since it's going to the Senate side, but I think it would be very important to provide the Board of Elections with the IT support that it needs, the funding it needs, all the things, whatever it needs to enable electronic filing to happen, because I don't know that it's only candidate error or candidate reluctance.
Point taken.
Representative McLaughlin?
I just want to add to that, because I know that the folks have tried to help me get mine filed electronically, and they have just been absolutely wonderful. But for some reason, my brain and my computer do not work, and it goes out. It's somewhere on my computer, but I don't know where. And so I have finally just got disgusted and know that if I do it to where it's where I can see it, that I know what it is, and I know that it's getting submitted on time. I just really hope that you, when you have your study, will do what Representative Ross said, but include some of us legislators who have tried to do it remotely, and we're just having a tough time.
President Floyd?
It's a follow-up, perhaps, when he joined West Virginia committee to look at it. Maybe he could have a box, whatever, so if the person wants to file it electronically, or if the person wants to file manually, so they can know what to expect. But the fear for a candidate, the fear in the back of their mind, is not filing timely and what would happen to that particular person. That's the fear. That's why my daughter do both. It's the fear for her father that if not sent in time, that his name would be printed in the media or not filing his report in the time amount. And she is one of those that do both.
If I could just speak that to all three of the members who have expressed this concern, please know that that will be taken into account, and that is the reason that we're trying to wait until 2013 instead of trying to do it now. I know we have two guests that are standing at the rear of the room. There are some chairs if you'd like them to my right.
Representative Michaud?
And while we're griping, how about providing some more platforms?
Platforms.
Representative Weiss?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you please, Representative Lewis, could you please talk to us about the change in terms of treasurer training here?
Representative Weiss, may I ask you to direct that to staff to make sure that the points are on track, please?
Go ahead.
The
actual treasurer training is not just
Mr. Chair, point of order. There's a lot of fans back here. Can everybody speak up?
The bill doesn't actually change the actual treasurer training. It's just the timing of it to ensure that a treasurer will have training.
Will you come up? You come up to my phone.
The bill doesn't change the actual treasurer training. It's the timing, so that to ensure that a treasurer has training prior to an election occurring, whether it's a primary, because it previously it was possible for someone to file, and if they lost the primary, their treasurer would never have the training prior to the primary occurring.
Further questions? Representative White?
Question for the Board of Elections.
Okay.
My question is, sometimes people file for office and don't comply with the requirements of reporting their campaign finances, and then they may not win. What are the consequences? Does the state board ever look at these types of non-filings or non-compliance with the treasurer requirement? In some cases, candidates have their spouses be the treasurer when, under the law, it's my understanding, they're not supposed to be. If they don't win, but they don't comply with the law, how do you all handle that?
First of all, I'm going to give a brief explanation and turn it over to Kim Stragg to finish up. Every non-compliant committee is sent a letter of noncompliance, and then there's a provision of termination. And if there's any law that's violated, it cannot be remedied by campaign staff working with that committee and eventually will be turned over to either the state board or to the district attorney. Kim, would you like to add to that?
I don't. That's exactly right. We treat all political committees, whether you win or you lose, you're still reports have to be compliant. It doesn't matter. Losers are still going to receive the same treatment.
Paul, you have a follow-up?
Just a follow-up.
Okay.
Is and I guess this would be for Ms. Strack, is every single candidate given the same degree of oversight? Because I'm aware of situations where would someone be able to look on the website and see if a letter of noncompliance had been sent?
Absolutely, we should. And if you see that one has not, please let us know, because it is our goal to make sure that every committee that doesn't file a report receives the same non-compliance letter. So that there should be no exceptions to that.
Just follow up. Thank you. Just for Ms. Strack. Many of us don't want to get into the business of policing other candidates' compliance with the law, but we may be aware of it going on. And we're doing the best job we can to follow the law and putting extensive amounts of time and energy into doing that. We don't want to be whistleblowers, but it's very frustrating when we are doing our best to get the training, follow the rules, fill out forms, send them in a timely manner, and that's not always happening, but we don't see consequences.
I see you standing, Mr. Bartlett. Do you have a quick response
for
that?
I would like to encourage everyone that's part of the process, whether you're a citizen, party, candidate, to police, because that's part of our safeguards in the process is self-policing. And certainly if you know something, all you need to do is let us know and we will take it from there, so that you, if you do not want to be out front, we can take it from there.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One quick comment. If you will consider those folks who do an electronic filing, if there were some way IT-wise to give you a receipt, to say it's received, and that way you know where it was received on the other end.
All right. Further discuss, President Floyd, for a quick follow-up.
Well, question for clarity. The threshold, it means so much. The 3,000, if you indicate that you set it up, if you're going to do 3,000,
Representative Floyd, the intent of this bill was to have it studied if for all amounts. It doesn't attempt to address that in this bill.
Last question.
Okay, go ahead.
Last question, because in some communities, candidates file, and they file this year and stop at 29999. Then they file the next time and stop at the same amount. I just like to know myself personally where the money goes.
Further discussion from committee members? Hearing none, Representative Eiler, you're recognized for your motion.
Well, I do my motion, but let me clarify one thing. I believe I looked over to Ms. Strack. I believe this threshold is 1,000.
Yes.
It's 1,000. It's only
changed
last year.
It was, I believe it was changed last year, wasn't it? Yeah, it was changed last year by this body.
Mr. Sherman, I'm sorry. I had trouble hearing Ms. Strax. She could stand it.
I'm sorry. The threshold is $1,000 for local candidates and counties. But any candidate, legislative, council, state, judicial, that files with our office, there is no threshold option.
All right, Representative Valley, you're recognized for your motion now.
I'd like to move from House Bill 346.
All right. You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. The motion carries. Now we'll have House Bill 710 before us, and I And we have a PCS for us. Representative Lewis moves for the PCS without opposition. The PCS is before us. Representative Lewis.
Mr. Chairman and ladies and gentlemen, you should have before you the proposed committee substitute. And just to be sure that we're right, it reads CSST-F-59B1. And have we had a motion?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And all right, with this bill before us, as we began the discussion yesterday, what this bill does is create a new state board of ethics, lobbying, and campaign finance. I will be glad to go into how the board is created. Representative Stamm has an amendment to that point as well. I'll be glad to go into the minutia, if you will, of the oath they take and things like that. I think we start to get into a little more substantive stuff on page 2, lines 38. This board will meet at least once monthly and upon call of the chair or upon call of three members of the board. They will be paid in accordance to statute, and they will have all powers and duties over the three areas that we've discussed: lobbying and ethics, campaign finance campaign finance regulation. The chair will be elected by the board. If you'll notice on over to a great deal of this bill, a lot of paper is spent on saying who can and can't be on the board, and also who's covered by the board. It goes through on page 13, request for advice. Page 15, it begins to discuss the enforcement powers of the board. Page 16 just makes a lot of statutory corrections. And I know that all of you certainly can read, so I don't want to bore you with what you already can read. Basically, I offer this bill today because I feel like we can create a board that truly is a one-stop shop that will be better able to maintain the public integrity of our entire ethics and the oversight of those ethical rules in one place. I've met with representatives from the three boards, and they're all very kind, and I thank them for their time. But what struck me as we met is how similar what they do really is. And as I'm trying not to repeat things that I said yesterday, but I will give you just a few examples if I can. The Board of Ethics requires a statement of economic interest. Under the current law, the Secretary of State requires its forms to be filled out, which basically tell where the money come from and how the money's spent. The campaign finance folks require a report that shows where the money came from and where the money went. There are instances where various areas of the law or various areas of rules overlap among these boards, and sometimes things fall through the crack, or sometimes there are duplications of effort going on regarding the same project, perhaps without the level of communication that could be there. I've got several examples of that if we need to name names. A big advantage of this is to create a uniform way that these boards can offer advice and issue opinions. I heard as I said yesterday, this bill does nothing to affect the administration of elections in the state. It does not mess with the state board. It does not mess with the election staff. It doesn't mess with the oversight of the county boards. I'm sure, Mr. Chair, that members have some things they'd like to ask, and I'll be glad to answer them, and I've got some further further comments at the end, if I can.
Representative Stam?
Yes, I have an amendment that I'd like to discuss because it sort of sets the tone for the whole bill. Can I send that forward?
Go ahead, sir.
All right. This new board will be six members, but I want to make it truly bipartisan. You know, sometimes things are bipartisan, like a bill is bipartisan if you get one Democrat to vote for it. You know what I'm saying, Representative McLaughlin? Or if you have an appointed board and you, the appointing person has to just get some random Republican out of the phone book, that makes it bipartisan. Well, this would make it truly bipartisan because it becomes the nominee of the other party. So in the case, for example, the Speaker would appoint one, well, the other one from the House would be three names submitted by the minority leader, and so forth. So to me, this is a true bipartisan board. So whatever you think of the rest of the bill, I hope you'll vote for this amendment.
Want to speak on the amendment?
I have no opposition.
Representative Cho?
Yeah, why would the minority leader have to submit three names to?
Well, Representative Shaw, it's just like today under the 11th State Ethics Bill. When I was when that was set up 4 years ago, I would submit two names to Speaker Hackney, and he would pick one, and vice versa. So that the leader has some discretion, but it still has to be somebody that the other party really wants, and not just somebody. You know, what we call on our side of Rhino. I don't know what y'all call the equivalent.
We don't have those kind of stuff. Oh, I'm sorry.
Further discussion on the amendment? Here, Representative Floyd?
I couldn't hear you.
Yeah. Go ahead. You know,
I appreciate the makeup of the board, but sometimes when I see board that doesn't reflect the diversity of this great state or this great house.
And perhaps Representative Stam could clarify, you're talking about the minority party.
I'm talking about the minority party. So that, for example, if you remained in the minority, hypothetically, you would submit proposed name to your leader, Representative Hackney, and he could do whatever diversity is done on that side.
Well,
go ahead.
We're on the same wavelength when I'm talking about the diversity with the makeup.
I don't know what you mean.
Further discussion on the amendment? Okay. Hearing no further discussion, Representative Stam moves his amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment carries. Further discussion on the bill. Representative Ross.
I have an amendment, too. I don't know if staff has... Oh, they're going to get copies, we'll, so I'd like to...
Yes, ma'am. We'll come back to you. Representative Michaud.
Yeah, I'm blowing in the wind right now, but sometimes blowing in the wind doesn't do it. A lot of things... like that. I still say what I said yesterday. This is a humongous undertaking. Representative Lewis has indicated, you know, that in terms of lobbyists, they make a report of money comes in and money goes out. The candidate makes a report of money coming in and money going out. But there are two different sets of principles involved in both those situations. And number one is that the project that's being offered here is project that has not been fully studied, and nobody knows what's going to be the outcome of this, and nobody knows how it's going to actually work. You got an ethics board that deals strictly with ethics, and it shouldn't be involved. Anybody there should not be involved in anything else. You got a totally different animal with the ethics board. Then you got the lobbying arm of the Secretary of State's office, which controls them. And why should not campaign finance remain with the Board of Elections? Because you're going to do campaigns through the elections office. You're going to, why are you going to separate those out from that? It just doesn't make sense in the long run until you have done something to study this thing and see, to make sure you know what you're doing. Because I really don't think you do know what you're doing when you do that. No disrespect to you, Mr. Chairman, or whoever. But these are big, real operations that are very, very sensitive operations. I mean, extremely sensitive operations. They deal with people's lifestyles, people's lives, and everything. They just ought not to be stuck in, because somebody wants to think they're going to be saving something, just stuck in one big, humongous board and then let it go at that. I still say that it may be a good idea, but I don't know. I would like to have more information. I'd like to have somebody who has looked at this thing, some board, some committee that has looked at this thing and see whether it really works or not. I can't know anywhere I can support anything until I know what I'm supporting.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I know that I missed a lot of the discussion on this bill yesterday, and I apologize for that, but I have a couple of questions. One is sort of along the lines of Representative Cho. It looks like we're taking parts of governmental agencies from several different places and then putting them all together and forming a new governmental agency. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Some more government, basically, is what I'm detecting here.
No, ma'am. I'd say it'd be a streamlined coordination of the government that already exists.
And then, as a follow-up to that, describe to me Type 1 transfers as far as staff and money and all of that goes. From Department of Administration, Secretary of State, Board of Elections, what are they going to be missing in terms of staff and resources as we move those things from their departments to a whole new department?
Representative, I requested from Secretary Coleman a list of all staff who were engaged in the carrying out of these my third verse today. I asked for a list of every employee that was involved with, that was employed at the Board of Ethics, that was employed at the Secretary of State, who was involved with the monitoring of lobbyists, and also for a list of all the employees who are employed at the Board of Elections who involved in campaign finance. I went through and if you'll look on page 21, section 45, we attempted to specify in the language of this bill that the current directors or the current individuals who hold these positions who all the positions would migrate over to the new board. There's no job loss. Ultimately, there could be some economies of scale, perhaps, that may may change that, but right now there's no job loss and no intent of that. One of the concerns that was brought up yesterday was a back office type concern, like IT support. Also received from Secretary Coleman a list of all those at the Board of Elections who are classified as IT folks. I believe there are more than six, but there are six that provide support to the operating systems over there, as best I've been made to understand it. This bill would move three of them over. So a lot of the concerns that were raised yesterday about the back office concerns, we're going to move over the administrative assistant from the Board of Ethics. So you've got somebody to answer the phone. I mean, we've tried to think this thing through and to take the steps that are necessary so that when this board comes into being, it'll be able to do its job. And I hope that's what you meant by type one transfer, because I'm sorry, I'd never heard that before.
I'm concerned, and just one last follow-up, I'm concerned about amounts of money that it's going to take to run this new agency. Under what portion of the budget will this new agency come? There's just a lot of questions in my mind about who's going to be lacking once we make these transfers, and who's going to have, and where is this all going to come from? I mean, we're looking at starting a whole new agency out of three different parts of the budget as it now exists. And it's just a lot for me to take in all in 2 days.
Chair.
Yes.
How long do we need?
We have this room until, I believe, 2 o'clock.
Though there are caucuses at 1:15, and there's rules right
now. To address your the budgetary items have been discussed with the appropriation people, and they believe it would be an easy fix to just move where the money is now, no more money, move where the money is now into this new board. Also, this board would be empowered, if it chose to hire an executive director. I've got assurances from the appropriations folks that there is enough money in the reserve account that if we were to create that one job, if the board were to decide that they were to need that job, that we could indeed fund it.
One last follow-up. You have folks coming from three different agencies, it sounds like. Under which portion of the budget will this new agency fall? General government, Secretary of State, Board of Elections?
General
government. Thank you.
Representative White.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking, we've got six people who are in charge. And I'm wondering who hires these directors of campaign finance, ethics, and lobbying?
Representative Weiss, are already hired and they're already in place and they're already named in this bill.
Follow up. Who oversees their conduct?
The six-member bipartisan board.
Follow up.
My sense is in the area that's under the Secretary of State's office, there is a full-time Secretary of State who is overseeing her operation. And I have the same sense about campaign finance, that you have somebody in charge who is overseeing. And my sense is that that is very different from a six-member board that meets once a month terms of overseeing staff of directors who have tremendous responsibilities. And there is a lot of accountability in the Secretary of State's office or in these other settings where if something goes wrong, there's somebody who's running a show as opposed to six people who, I get the sense, two of them were picked out of a hat. And I'm not quite sure about the other four, but you know who's in charge and where the chain of authority is. And I think that's very different from a citizen's board. I'm all for citizen involvement and advisory boards, but that's very different than actually having to administer an agency. And I would just say there may be some very good ideas that you're presenting here, and maybe you've been working on this for a while, but we've been meeting since January, and the first I heard about it was yesterday. Maybe I missed it.
It was in the budget.
Okay, thank you. But it was never clearly spelled out, and I just feel that if we're going to be making this major change, whether you agree with it or not, it's a major change, we really need to have a lot more input on how this is done. And this committee, we're being told this is it, this is how it's going to be, and you have until 2 or whatever to decide, but I don't think that's the same as really grappling with a lot of the questions, and I believe that that would be better done in a study with a lot more input from everyone.
Representative, if the board shared your concern that the three directors doing what they are doing now, except in better coordination in the same place, wasn't getting it done, they are empowered to hire an executive director. That's my only reply.
Representative Ross.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to send forward my amendment, and I think that some of the concerns that have been raised could be addressed with this amendment. So I speak on the amendment?
Yes. Does everybody have a copy of Representative Ross's amendment? All right. Representative Ross, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My amendment is to take this bill and turn it into a study combining the functions of these three areas, and to ask that the Legislative Ethics Committee do that study. And I think that they are absolutely the appropriate group to do it, for many of the reasons that Representative Stam mentioned for his amendment. It's bipartisan. These are folks who have dealt with the primary ethics issues that have come up here. To my knowledge, almost everything that they've done so far has been unanimous. There's been a lot of agreement as to how to approach things. It is not, it's a very, very thoughtful group, they meet on a fairly regular basis. I will also share with the committee that I have spoken with folks who serve on the State Ethics Commission who are not at all comfortable with moving this quickly on this piece of legislation and want to take a longer look at it. And I've spoken with people who are in both parties in the House who have concern about moving this quickly. So I think that having the LEC take the time to do it and do a thoughtful job would be the right way to go. And I commend the amendment to you.
Representative Lewis, would you like to speak on the amendment?
Thank you. I oppose the amendment. I appreciate the remarks from the lady from Wake. I am not surprised that anyone in a state agency would be opposed to the change. And I think this bill is well thought out. It is modeled on what 26 states already do. I would ask you to vote no on the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. Representative Stam.
I obviously am not speaking for the Legislative Ethics Committee. I'm co-chair, but committee has never met on this question, but so I'm not speaking for it. But the reason she gave is a reason to reject the amendment, because that committee, I believe, has always been unanimous and deals with ethics and has yet to get into politics. This, with campaign finance in it, has got to get into politics. And I think we're going to keep the LEC clear of that.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to comment on the bill, but there would be a perfect amendment. First of all, if you would allow me to bring a report of a House victory through email, I've got a report of House victory in the milk chug contest. So like a modern-day Pheidippides delivering news of the Athenian victory in a marathon here. And moving back to the amendment, sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm concerned. I'd like to, any idea is worth considering to better regulate ethics and campaign finance. And I certainly like the idea of aligning like functions with like, but I still have not been convinced yet that moving campaign finance away from elections to this gets us closer to that. In fact, it might represent, I'm not sure, but it might represent a step backward, because the campaign finance and election function are, I think, inexorably entwined. And I don't want to untie that lightly. So moving past that 30,000-foot big picture, I'm also concerned about the specifics of the implementation. Some of my personal experiences with the Representative McLaughlin I alluded to on filing campaign finance reports, the technical difficulties that came up with that. Board staff walked us through that, but there are a lot of glitches there, but it's now something that seems workable. I worry about all of a sudden taking that and moving it over to another agency, and it's just not as easy as picking up the equipment and picking up the people and moving it to a new agency and everything's going to be fine. And I worry that there's pitfalls like that spread throughout this process. I by no means oppose this process, but I do think that we need to take a much closer look at it. So I do support the amendment and would be like to be in a position to come back and fully support a series of recommendations from that study to move things forward.
Further discussion on the amendment? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Alexander.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps maybe the Legislative Ethics Commission, if you've always pretty much acted in unanimity, would be the perfect place for this to go. I think I have dealt with all three of these components in various ways and for various reasons, and I see them all as very separate entities. And so to me, the Legislative Ethics Committee would be a good place, because it seems to me like what they'd have to do is spend some time and would eventually come to some kind of conclusion. And they would do it perhaps in a unanimous manner, which would give a lot of credence to this particular piece of legislation.
Representative Current?
I'll wait. Speak on the bill.
Okay. Further, Representative Weiss.
Just on the amendment, I believe that a lot of questions have been raised about this bill, that if you're going to make a major change, you need to know what you're getting into and do it right. I've heard references to, we looked at, we did, we found, we think, but I'm not quite sure who we are, because the people in this room were not around the table when this was developed, or many of us weren't, and everyone in this room and in this state is potentially affected by this change. And I would just say, if it's worth doing, let's make sure. Let's make sure we truly understand the ramifications, because I personally am troubled by a number of pieces here that I don't think have been answered properly. I would like to know who is really in charge. I think you need accountability in an area of this importance, and I'm not confident at this point that there is true accountability, and if something goes wrong, where do you go? Who do you go to? You don't go to the head of the Board of Elections. You don't go to the Secretary of State anymore. So I think the amendment is a good idea. I think the Ethics Commission would be a wise choice. I actually would like even more input on that commission, but I can support the amendment in its current form. would say, let's really make sure this is the right course, or let's, before we go down this path.
Okay. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the Ross Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed to the Ross Amendment, no.
No.
Division.
Division having been called, will show of hands satisfy you? Those in favor, please raise your hand. Okay, those, you got it?
Yes.
Those opposed? The amendment fails with 11 ayes and 15 noes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stamm.
Move for a favorable report for the PCS as amended, rolled into committee substitute unfavorable for the original bill. I think it's a good bill.
We've heard the motion. Further discussion. Representative Starnes.
Thank you. And I apologize for being late because I was in another meeting. But now, you're going to move the people from the various agencies into one department. When the people from campaign reporting move over from the State Board of Elections, will they take with them the IT people that do the campaign reporting? Is that included in this bill?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Representative Bryant?
I was just wanting to speak on in opposition to the bill. It appeared to me that the purpose was to get multiple party control of these functions versus having them be an executive branch or in the Council of State. It seems to me, and I'm not quite clear how to get this structure. And it looks like the existing structure we have would require you can have that same kind of input through a robust oversight role, which is what we have here in the General Assembly, through the Elections Oversight Committee. And I just wanted to encourage you use that structure with separation of powers, boundaries that we currently have, versus for purposes of giving political control, creating a whole new agency with these functions, bringing these functions together all of a sudden. It would seem to be, and to study the matter in some form or fashion to allow time for that shift to happen. So that's my question.
Representative Michaud.
Yeah, Representative Lewis made a statement a minute ago about the IT folk. Those IT folk I thought were assigned to the State Board of Elections and not to any particular division of the State Board of Elections.
Well, Representative Michaud, their function deals with campaign finance. I'm sure that Mr. Bartlett would have no trouble in identifying the three that would be moved.
Sir, I do have a problem. I know only one is dedicated and others to help. The other thing that we need to know is we have servants that are dedicated to helping the state voter registration system and the campaign funding. How do we divide that? Where are they going to be housed? We would just like to know some answers.
The intent, and as is spelled out in the bill, is the new board would be housed. It's my understanding that the State Board of Elections is in the process of moving to a new site. And when that move is complete, it would be the first choice that this new board would move into that building. If that building is not available, the bill provides that a suitable place will be found.
Follow up.
Yeah, these are state board transfers you're talking about here. That's what you're talking about here. These folks those IT folks are assigned to the State Board of Elections. And Mr. Bartlett is right. you got nobody to move there. You got no, because those folks are assigned to the State Board of Elections. You're going to do a type one transfer for campaign finance, those folks are assigned, and that's it.
Representative Starnes?
Let me ask another question, and I'll maybe Mr. Bartlett or the bill sponsor, either one, but in this proposal, where you move the campaign financing over to this new division, and then let's say they discover an error. Now, then when they notify the candidate that there's been an error in their report or there's been a penalty assessed, doesn't that letter then come from Mr. Bartlett, the executive director? And so with the campaign reporting, if they find an error, do they have to then report back to the State Board of Elections to follow through with any penalty or corrective action? I'm just trying to be clear.
No, Representative Starnes. The letter would come from the director of the campaign finance division.
Might be on the ethics letter out there.
Further questions? Representative Weiss?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We heard earlier the concern about if something as basic as should we make all this electronic in another bill. You're dealing with very detailed, intricate laws that people around the state, including those in this room, have to comply with. When I pick up the phone and make a phone call to ask a question of one of these three heads who don't have anybody in charge or someone on their staff with a lot of questions about how this is all going to work, I can't wait 3 months for the bureaucracy to get fixed when it's already... It's set up now. You know where to go, you make the phone call, and you get an answer. And it's disturbing to me that we would be rolling this out with a million questions and huge implications, because if people don't get it right, there are major consequences. If you get your form wrong, if you don't get your question answered right, if you don't get the answer in a timely way, if you don't follow your form in a timely manner, you're in deep yogurt. And I just don't have the comfort level that any of the kinks, much less all the kinks, have been worked out. I mean, if the heads of these organizations can't explain how this can be seamless, how are we supposed to feel comfortable about this?
Representative Stamm.
Well, I think the bill will make you more comfortable, because just last week a fellow went down to state ethics and asked whether he should register as a lobbyist. They said, sure, go down to the Secretary of State. Went down there and they said, no, we can't register you. You're not a lobbyist. And I've seen the opinions coming out of the Secretary of State on lobbying that have been directly contrary to advice given by the State Ethics Commission. This bill helps that by putting them in the same office. They can talk to each other.
Mr. Chairman, are you going to allow some public comments? This is a major.
No, you can hold on one moment. We're having committee discussion right now. Do we have further discussion of members of the committee? Representative Starnes.
Well, I just want to understand the mechanics, because what we're doing potentially may affect every one of us, so I don't want to dig the hole that I'm going to fall into. But if there, and I probably don't understand everything, because I'm not a big fundraiser, and fortunately I've never been in trouble with State Board of Elections. But if they find an error in the report, and they determine that there's a penalty or a fine or something like that, do they have the authority to do those penalties and fines, or does it have to be referred back to the State Board of Elections, and then the State Board has to vote to assess the penalty or the fine? Can I address that to Mr. Bartlett?
Mr. Bartlett, would you like to answer that question?
I only heard bits and parts. I can't answer that unless you ask it.
under this scenario where they do the campaign reporting over there, and then they determine that there's been an error, and there would be a penalty, or if it was severe enough, it was a fine or whatever. Do they have the authority to issue the penalty or the fine, or does it have to come back as a recommendation to the state board, and the state board votes to assess penalties and fines?
It's my understanding under this legislation, and Mr. Chairman, correct me if I'm wrong, that would be left up to the new board and not the state.
The answer, Representative Starnes, is the new board, campaign finance division, would issue the fines.
Representative Isler?
Unless it's been changed, I understand the effective date is January 1 of next year, 6 months away.
Yes, sir. The board would be named by October, and the transfer of staff would occur on the 1st.
Representative Ross.
Just thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to point out, following up on what Representative Isler asked, sure, it's all transferred, but there's going to be rulemaking during a presidential election. So we're basically not going to really know what's going on. And we're going to have temporary rules and all of this stuff during a presidential election year. That's really, really bad timing.
Further discussion? Representative Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to follow up a little bit, if I may, with Representative Starnes. And I wasn't able to be in the meeting yesterday, so if it's already covered, tell me, and I'll just wait for somebody to come to me and tell me the answer to this. But if we're getting all these people together, and we're just thinking that the State Board of Elections at this point is moving somewhere, then we might have these people here. Then I'm hearing the words October. This thing is on such a fast track, and I'm not sure who really does understand exactly all the ramifications of bringing three entities together like this. I mean, and it does affect all of us, Representative Starnes, all of the finance laws, all of that. That does affect every single one of us in this room, and so I'm just having a hard time.
Representative Weiss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would respectfully ask that you consider giving the public an opportunity to weigh in on this.
Well, we'll see where we are when committee members get done asking questions, but we're limited in time. So, Representative Stamm.
And I know that the real time is, of course, quarter to.
That's right.
By House rules. You know, we've had time to think about this. Wasn't this in the budget? Didn't we debate this in Appropriations Committee? Yes, it did get taken out. But it's been out on the table for several months now. And, you know, you sort of have to keep up with business.
All right, Representative Stamm, I'm seeing no further discussion from the committee. Your motion is before us.
I'm so moved.
All right, those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, no.
No.
The show of hands. All right. Those in favor, please raise your hand.
Fifteen.
Those opposed, please raise your hand.
11.
The bill passes 15 to 11.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am.
Just point of order. We talked about committee ending at quarter of. I respectfully ask to have the public have an opportunity to be heard. There were 15 minutes. There are a lot of people in the room who wanted to be heard, and I would just make the point of order that
disappointed. Representative Burr said as soon as people were quiet, there was time. People were quiet, there was time. I just wanted to make that known, and I hope that's in the record.
I'd like to poll the committee if I could. We have one more bill to take up. I understand that the party caucuses are meeting. It is fine with the chair to meet during the recess tonight or to continue on. I believe the bill that will be before you is much more simple than yesterday and will not take much time. So may I ask for a show of hands for those who... please forgive me, Representative Ross. The bill is House Bill 300, and the short title is the Election Fairness Act. If the chair, will exercise a little bit of indulgence, the bill has been changed to basically alternate alphabetically by political party the names on a ballot. It will do it once every 4 years. In other words, one of the concerns yesterday was it might always have the R's on top during the year. So we can discuss this now or we can discuss this during the recess. So I'll ask again, is there objection to doing the bill now?
PCS passed out.
Seeing none, the chair calls House Bill 300. There is a proposed committee substitute. Representative Stamm moves that the proposed committee substitute be before the committee for consideration. Seeing no objection, it is so ordered. Representative Jones, you are recognized.
Ladies and gentlemen, the PCS before you is H300 CSST 60 version 2. The today's date, 12:02:09 p.m. That should be the correct PCS. Hours late, I'm going to be very brief, very simple, very candid. If you will look at the back of the page, on page 2 at the very top, you basically see the current law as it exists. It's H300 CSST 60 version 2. You'll go to page 2, the back of the page. The way the current law exists as far as the order on the ballots, and this is for general elections only, I would remind you that there was a lawsuit a few years ago, a potential lawsuit, and the order of ballot was changed for the primary but not for the general election. So the way the order of the ballot currently works, if you see at the top of page 2, the two top political parties in the state, the only two that are over 5% of statewide voter registration, are listed in alphabetical order, which clearly means that it's always the D and then the R. Okay. Then on the second line, you see the other political parties, if they get on the ballot, then they are listed after the first two, and they are also in alphabetical order. What this would attempt to do is to make the ballot more fair. And I just would ask you, first of all, the first premise is that it is an advantage to be listed first on the ballot. Now, if you hold that premise, there have been numerous nonpartisan studies around the country that say that being first on the ballot is some degree of an advantage. And I would just simply say, if you don't hold that premise, and particularly on the Democratic side, if you don't hold that premise, I know there are plenty of Republicans that would like to be on the ballot first all the time. So we could change, you know, if you don't care who's first, I think some of the Republicans would like to be first all the time. If you do hold that premise, that it is indeed some advantage to be listed first, then the second premise is that the ballots should be as fair as we can reasonably make them. In other words, if you want the ballot to be fair, then you know we need to do something to make it more fair. Now, if you like it the way it is and you think it benefits you personally and it's all about you, then don't vote for this bill. However, if you're looking for the ballot to be fair, this is a better bill. It's not a perfect bill. I'll tell you, I haven't seen the perfect bill yet. This one could probably be better. It does address some of the concerns. The reason we did a PCS, we took into account the concerns that Representative Bryant raised yesterday. about, you know, if you're changing the ballot. I think the optimum way to do it would be if we are in an election and there's two or more candidates for every election, you are always making sure that you're rotating that ballot in a way that if there are two candidates, one's going to be at the top half the time, one's going to be at the bottom half the time. And that's the way it would work. However, the way this does it is to say that every 4 years, we're going to change it. And so that in 1 4-year cycle, it's going to be just as it is now in alphabetical order. In another 4-year cycle, it's going to be reverse alphabetical order. And the reason we do that is because, obviously, in a 4-year cycle, you've got one presidential election, you've got one off-year election. That's about all I think I need to say. I think it's simple. I think it's just saying that we want it to be fair. I would open for any questions, but I know we're limited in time.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wonder, and maybe this is a question for the for Mr. Bartlett. I was under the impression that we already did a form of rotating of names on ballots. Is that not the case?
We do in the primaries, but we don't in the general election. That's what this would do. As I said, currently in the general election, you've got the Democrat and then the Republican, and then you've got any other parties. Let's just say it was the Libertarian Party and the Green Party. The Green Party comes first in alphabetical order, so they would be listed first. Okay, so you'd have Democrat, Republican, Green, Libertarian, and unaffiliated, I guess. Okay, the way this would work would be in the future on a 4-year cycle. One 4-year cycle, you'd have alphabetical order like I just said. The other 4-year cycle, it would be reverse alphabetical order. You'd have Republican and then Democrat, and then the next two would be Libertarian and then Green, and it would be that way on that 4-year cycle. And obviously, let's say a county commissioner race or a race where you've got more than one candidate running, right now we're listed in alphabetical order. During a 4-year cycle, it would be reverse alphabetical order. So you don't get the advantage if your name starts with A over somebody who starts with Z.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question for the bill sponsor. In your effort to be fair, and I think I'm hearing to depoliticize this issue, did you consider having this bill become effective after January 1, 2014, so that it would not have the appearance of making this change right before presidential election?
I did not. The current law, as I understand it, if I read the statute right, I think this has been in effect for at least 10 years. So, you know, we could have said we wanted to go to reverse alphabetical order for the next 10 years, just to be fair, but we didn't do it that way. We decided we would just start now, change the rules, make it on a 4-year cycle, and again, we just want to be fair. And I would say that it could be more perfect than it is. And this is the first step of the process. If we can perfect it later to make it even better, that would be great, but I think we need to do something.
Representative Stam?
A thought. Of course, the perfect bill is the one I filed 4 years ago, which every ballot is different. But this is a step forward, but I want an amendment that the Democrats can't change their name to the Whig Party just to get on the ballot first. When it's their turn.
Further discussion, further debate?
Do you have a motion already?
Representative Moore is recognized for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move for a favorable report to the PCS for House Bill 300 and favorable.
Further discussion, further debate? Seeing none, all those who favor the motion will please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed will please signify by saying no.
No.
In the opinion of the chairs, the ayes have it. The bill will be given a favorable report.
Let's go, champ.
The committee stands adjourned.
Hey, David.